This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
BT and South back on the Fan, 888-808-1019. I don't know if we talked about this specifically before, BT, but you brought up Alonso and talking about the Yankees and Mets. Like, the idea, see, this is how stuff happens. These rumors get thrown out there, and then people start to run with it and think it's a possibility. The idea that the Yankees would sign Pete Alonso to me is absurd. They're not signing Pete Alonso. The Yankees have higher priorities here. And if we think the Mets aren't going to overpay for Alonso, what makes you think the Yankees would overpay for Pete Alonso? I'm not knocking Pete the player. I'm talking about the value. Whereas a team like Toronto or San Francisco or whoever, Baltimore, Houston, they may overpay to get a guy like Alonso and value his power. The Mets and Yankees aren't going to do that. I don't think Alonso is going to be a Yankee or the Yankees' plan B, nor should I, nor would I make Alonso my plan B if I'm the Yankees.
Oh, my God, I hope they don't. I can't imagine that they would do that. And if they did, to me, that would be the absolute wrong move, because everything that we've talked about, what the Yankees need to start prioritizing would be better defense and, you know, better base running. Now, again, I want to be fair to Pete, because when he first came up, he was pretty much a butcher at first base, but he's willed himself into a functional first base. He really has. You know, he digs the ball out of the dirt. He's never going to have great range, but he catches the balls at him, and he actually has made a few diving plays. So, you know, Pete's become an adequate first baseman. I just don't like the profile, because everything that I'm trying to get away from if I'm running the Yankees, a lower batting average. It's now 2 years in a row. It's not like the one bad year 2 years ago where, like, you know, usually in the 260s, now all of a sudden he's dropping to about whatever it was, 215, 220. It's now 2 years. He's basically a 240 hitter who doesn't run and who is maybe a tick better defensively than the average around the league, and he's not going to age well, and he's 30. So I have zero interest in Pete Alonso, none.
But right, and that's why the Yankees won't either. So the idea of it is just foolish to me. I don't care what they leaked or what they said or what's been. It doesn't make any sense. Let's say the Yankees lose Soto, okay? Mm-hmm. Soto walks, he goes to the Mets, wherever. Soto's not a Yankee anymore. What do you think the Yankees' biggest area of need is?
They would have to get a power. They'd have to get a lefty bat, because now they're too righty dependent.
You think that's their biggest need?
I went out of order a bit. I mean, because I just said what their biggest need is. They've got to catch the baseball better, and they've got to get better on the bases.
Correct. So, like that still remains the same, even if they lose Soto. And my point is, and you were kind of saying this anyway, but I'll just get us there.
Mm-hmm.
Power should not be atop their list. I'm not saying you don't want more of it, but when you even without Soto, Judge, Stanton, Wells, like the Yankees, power would not be atop the list of priority, at least for me. What's the one thing you would want if you're signing Pete Alonso? Like, there's one thing that makes him valuable.
That's it.
It's power.
That's it.
So then you, and even if you were going to say, like, they would need a lefty power bat, okay, well, maybe it might be a nice addition, or a lefty bat more specifically. Well, that's still not Pete Alonso. He does not fit what the Yankees need with or without Juan Soto. It doesn't make any sense.
It makes no sense to me. And I don't know how much of this is part of the game, like, I don't know. I can't substantiate this, but just thinking out loud, like, all right, you know, hey, the Mets are going to obviously go after Soto, and maybe this is the Yankees' way of having a little fun playing the game, the territoriality game. Like, all right, I mean, listen, you might mess with our guy, but we know that not all, but some of the a good portion or a decent portion of the Met fan base still, you know, loves Pete because he's a homegrown mm-hmm. Met and he's done some good things for him. Maybe this is how we jab back a little bit. Listen, it's a game until it's not a game. The game, like the rhetoric, the stupid rhymes from Scott Boras, the conjecture. God. Oh my God, the conjecture. The conjecture. All the things that we talk about, they're interesting, but they're not real until they become real. And I would be floored irate if the Yankees signed Alonso. There's no way. Can you imagine the irony for all the, and it was never personal with Pete at all. It's never personal with anybody unless it becomes personal. And I try to play above that. I try not to stoop to that level. The criticisms of Pete were always baseball driven. Some people may have interpreted it as something else. I can't control that. But from a baseball perspective, he does nothing for me for the Yankees. Zero.
That's exactly right. He does not. He's the exact opposite of what they need. So that makes sense. It's not knocking Pete. It's knocking his fit with the Yankees. I think the reason why he's not going to end up with the Mets is because somebody's going to offer him more money mm-hmm. to go elsewhere, whether it is Chicago, Houston, Toronto, San Francisco, whatever. I think Pete might be able to get one of those teams to pony up because they want the power and value that, and they can't get the other options. And the Mets at least have value because he's been a Met, so there's a little more value there,
and
you could argue that they still need Soto plus another bat, and I would argue that. I would prefer Soto and Adames, but I would certainly take Soto and Alonso at the right price. But the Yankees, it makes no sense whatsoever.
You know where I stand, and I know where you stand, I would think most Yankee fans are in alignment with what we're saying, I would think. Now, that doesn't mean that there's not value for Pete, and I know you know this, but if you find a team, like, let me just throw Baltimore out there.
Yeah, I think it's a good value for them. Yeah,
yeah, who has a lot of athletes, you know, so
they lose Santander, let's say, and they need to replace that power.
Yep, although he is a switch hitter, but and Pete's solely right, I got you, but, like, the deficiencies for the Yankees, now they have had greater strength than the Orioles, but what they don't have that Baltimore has, and maybe another team or two that has some young, explosive, dynamic athletes in their lineup, even Kansas City to a lesser extent. Like, to me, that's a nice fit for somebody like Pete, who just brings pop, immense pop, and immense fear when he's going well, that maybe complements some of the younger, more well-rounded players. The problem is the Yankees don't have really, I mean, outside of Volpe, and we'll see what he becomes, and Jazz to an extent as well, many well-rounded athletic players. So I think Pete just brings them down. But the money, I want to get back to the money for one second. Think about what we were talking about last segment about Soto and 50 mil, and there's got to be that line. All right, wouldn't be 750. You would say no, and I got you. And I don't want 13, or I definitely don't want 14 or 15 years. I would say no there. I do think it's important not to get too wrapped up in the money, because let's just say somebody went bonkers and Soto went to $55 million for the first 5 years. I'm just throwing it out there.
Right.
When you compare that to Scherzer, who made 43.3, or Verlander, who made 43.3, or DeGrom, who made 37, or Trout, who made 35.5, who always hurt, Correa, who's not the same player, 33.3, you know, or Arenado, 32.5. When you look at the 50-ish, or mid, I'll use the 55 I threw out there, and you look at who Soto is, and then you compare it to the other guys making big money, not quite 55, I'll give you that, but who basically did nothing in most of those spots this year, you can justify giving Soto that kind of money.
Right. Yeah, because you're not getting, when you look at the value, absolutely. And I'm just trying to do the math here real quick again. I think Soto's ending up with around 700, probably just under it, whether it's 680, 670. Because to your point, let's say that the team says, okay, for the next 10 years, we're going to give you $55 million a year. Mm-hmm. And then the final 3 years of a 13-year deal, you're going to get $40 million a year. Total 670, I think, if my math was correct on that, using the calculator on my phone. You're going to get, any way you slice it, however you want to go, AAV, look, you could technically go to 60 if he wants more AAV. Okay, then we'll give you 60 for the first 3 years, or for the first 10 years or whatever, and then the final 3 years are going to be far less than that to make it come around the same amount.
Yep.
I would be stunned, and I always go over than what people expect. I'd be stunned if Soto got more than 700. And even 7 is pushing it.
Yeah, no, I don't even know if he gets to 7. I know that that's the consensus, like 7 is definitely attainable. I don't know that I'd be surprised if he falls short of that, but do you think there's a team out there, and hey, maybe it's one of our teams, that just goes, all right, because there's going to be some creative language in this contract. To think that it's going to be 14 or 15 years for, you know, $45 to $52 million, it's ridiculous. That's not happening. So do you think there's a team, whether it's Seattle or whomever, that says, all right, Juan, we're going to give you from the ages of 26 to 30, so five more full seasons, we're going to give you $60 million a year
right.
with your opt-out after five. So now you're 31, 32, still with massive earnings potential, and now you're back out there. And so if it's, let's just say it's 50 for five, that's 250, obviously, and then he knows that he can opt out still in his prime.
Or so go 60 for five, right?
Okay, so 60 for five is three. Okay, yeah. I was thinking 60 yeah. for five is three. So you make $300 million guaranteed, and then after five, when you're still firmly in your prime, you can opt out. We have no control. It's fully your leverage, your power. You opt out, then you go out, whether it's here or somewhere else,
yeah.
but you could go shopping for another 600, which brings it to 900.
Yeah.
Now, like, that's possible.
Yeah, yeah, and I wouldn't be shocked if that were the case. Leave it up to him. And then if I were the Mets or Yankees at that point, I'd say, yes, I'd give you the 600.
Me too.
Yeah, and then hope that he opts out.
Me too.
Because at 30, you don't want him anymore.
Me too.
But yes, I do think there are going to be some type of creative deals with that. All right, let's get back to the phones. 888-808-1019. Rob is calling from Danbury, Connecticut. What's up, Rob?
Gentlemen, good afternoon. Thank you for taking the call. BT, I'm a little disappointed in your Knicks take from the last couple of segments, and if you'll allow me to have a conversation with you,
yeah,
I can go why.
Of course. What do you got? What's up?
Thanks, brother.
Yeah.
There was a caller a couple callers ago who touched on it already, but first year that LeBron did his thing down in Miami, that team was 9-9 through 18 games and ended up in the finals. So there's an example, but on the other side of the coin, the example of teams that have done what the Knicks are trying to do, make big superstar trades that have failed, all of the other nonsense around those teams, and we'll use the empty net, shout out the legend Steve Summers, we'll use the empty net as the example here. When Durant got there, they were poorly coached, and those players had no respect for the coach. The GM had his power taken away, and it felt like the players were running the organization, and you just felt and saw dysfunction, none of which exists around the Knicks right now. And then I agree with that part. Thanks, brother. My other point here is that we're so early.
This is easy.
So I was waiting for, like, for a pushback a little bit there.
I was waiting for you to come at me, Rob. I thought you were going to get after it. Come on, buddy. Let's go.
I don't want to be disrespectful.
It's all good.
To you on your own show.
All right, good.
There's three and four, right?
Yep.
This isn't even the equivalent of two NFL weeks worth of games. So to have that take, it just feels, and again, I don't want to be disrespectful.
Well, no.
It just feels lazy, or like you pulled
the... Hold on. I got you. I would definitely not use lazy, because I've watched every single possession. I would use the... If you want to say it's anything, maybe it's early, maybe it's an overreaction, that's fine. But the one thing I got to point out, and trust me, I remember the visual of LeBron walking past Spoelstra and basically ignoring him when they started 9-8. I understand that. LeBron is not the right example with Miami, because at that point, LeBron was 27 years of age. We'd love Jalen Brunson. He ain't LeBron.
Right. Well, also, to just counter Rob for a second there and defend you, BT, not that you need it, but it's just factual. It's not just seven games. You said the same thing before the season started.
Yep.
So that backs up having legitimate concerns. If you were concerned going in, and then you've watched how they've played through seven games, I can understand why you'd be concerned, maybe even more so now. Now, I tend to agree with Rob that it is early, but I also had no concerns coming. I mean, I knew that it wasn't going to be the same thing right out of the gate, and I think you acknowledge that as well. But that's the point, is that it's not just, they're going to be the greatest thing ever, championship Knicks, and then all of a sudden, oh, they're 3-4, now the sky is falling. That's not what's going on here. You're just saying you're concerned about it as you were before this group even played a game.
So basically what you're saying, it's the opposite of what I do with the Jets.
Woo! No, the Jets changes week to week, exactly.
Oh, God almighty. Yeah, they'll do that to even the strongest person.
Although wait until tomorrow. Wait until tomorrow with that. We'll have some fun with the Jets tomorrow.
They got a fighting chance. We will do it tomorrow. It's a massive game, and it might be the last massive game that matters for them this year. But, I will admit, I'm consistent with my preseason take. Okay, so that matters to me, and I think it should matter to the audience. I'm probably, even then, when I expressed some concerns about what they could become without the guys that they lost, I was conflicted, because I know Karl Anthony Towns is incredible, and I know that he's not the reason why they're 3-4. I'm not saying that. So I knew that it was a move you had to make because of the ceiling elevation, theoretically, mm-hmm. but it was also a concern because the thing that we kind of gloss over until it's clearly not there or it is there, like last year's Knicks, is the inability to quantify chemistry. And that is a tricky thing. We could talk, well, the Yankees didn't have this. The Mets don't have this. The Jets don't have an offensive line. The Giants can't score touchdowns because their quarterback stinks. Like, the chemistry is a very nebulous thing. You know it when it's there, and you know when it's not. And right now it's not. Doesn't mean it won't get there. But I will stand by this. It will get better. I do not think it will mirror last year's chemistry, which was off the charts all time.
Reed is calling from Manhattan. What's up, Reed?
Hey, how's it going, Sal and BT? First time caller, long time listener. Thanks for having me on.
All right, first call. There you go.
What's
you
up, Reed? We appreciate it. What's on your mind?
Yeah, so I'm concerned about the Knicks for a couple of reasons. The first is, obviously it's early, we know that. They're 3-4. They also lead the league in three-point percentage, and I don't think that's going to keep up. They're shooting 42% from three, and they're still only 3-4, and their shooting got worse. Another reason that Brunson is maybe struggling a little more, or at least working harder out there for his budget, is because of DiVincenzo. I know Ananobi and Bridges and everybody can shoot, but their defenders don't have to be stuck to them way out like they did on DiVincenzo, and there's just less room for an undersized Brunson to work.
That's true. I think that's an outstanding basketball point. Like, if you were to take, you know, any amazing basketball mind, Patino, John Wooden, Pat Riley, whomever, right? And you actually put the Knicks out, and I'm saying isolating on Jalen Brunson, and thanks for the call, buddy. And he runs through, you know, a series of offensive sets where it's been a little complicated or different for Brunson this year. Of course OG can shoot from the corner. Yeah, Bridges shoots the heck out of it from the corner. I got that. But there's a stagnation. And I know that OG scored mid-range and attacked the rim a little bit in last year when he had to in the postseason. We talked about that. But DiVincenzo was a guy who can let it rip from 30 and can also up fake you, put it on the floor, and attack the rim and throw it down.
Yeah, but I wouldn't say he could create his own shot.
No, DiVincenzo could. Much more than Bridges and much more than OG. Absolutely.
Put the ball on the floor and create his own shot?
Yes, he's bouncier than those guys. No question.
I'm not saying he's not bouncy. I don't think he's a better scorer than those guys. He could shoot the three, sure, and he could attack the rim, but where's the mid-range game? That, to me, is being able to put the ball on the floor, shake your defender, pull up, and knock it down. To me, that's not... DiVincenzo didn't do that well enough. Now, OG Anunoby, you and I talked about it. I was the one who said it. He can't put the ball. The Knicks don't have anybody that can create their own shot, and then OG Anunoby started to do that in the postseason to a certain extent. That's not his strength, though. I think Bridges has to be that guy. If not Karl Anthony Towns out of the post, if not Jalen Brunson attacking the rim, to me, Bridges has to be that guy. And I think he's far better at that than DiVincenzo.
Well, they do different things. Yeah. You know, I think there's different skill sets there. To me, you talk about, let's look at it, you're going against the Knicks, right? And you're going against last year's team and this year's team, because this really is the crux of the matter. And you're talking about defensive integrity and being connected and rotating and having to react to whatever problems the opposing team last year and this year team presents. Now, okay, I'm not saying that DiVincenzo is Jordan putting it on the deck or somebody like that, but I think that there's an ability with this year's team to sag off a little. Now, you don't want to give them open looks, clearly, but it's less about DiVincenzo getting to the rim, although he could do that, and more about him doing something that makes the defense overreact. And once they overreact, if your ball movement is good, now you get better looks, not just from the perimeter, but you get runs at the rim because guys are out of position, guys are running, the up fakes, like they know. They know what OG wants to do. Corner. They know Bridges. Corner. They know Brunson. Yo-yo. Pick and roll. Mid-range. They know how to defend the Knicks. The variable was DiVincenzo. And I'm not saying of course, Hartenstein as well, but specific to this part with Devo, is that he was more, in my opinion, more offensively multi-layered than the two wings. Now, I'm not saying that in totality they don't bring more defense and other things. They do. But the thing that's missing from the DiVincenzo game, I believe, is hurting Brunson. And until they get away from that or find a way to solve it,
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, I think there's going to be some games where we're like, what the hell's going on?
BT and Sal on the Fan will come back, have a little NFL power rankings on the other side, as well as your calls, 888-808-1019.
Now it's time to power up with BT and Sal.
All right, here we go. A little power rankings in the NFL. Let's start us off, BT. Good job. Hop with that. I like it.
I love this song. A little snap.
Spice it up a little bit with some power rankings. So I think last time we did this weeks ago before the baseball playoffs took a prominent role, obviously, on our show, we started going five down, right?
Yes.
Okay, so number five for you is?
It's the Commanders. The Commanders are a legitimate team. I think they're the second-best team in the NFC. Their quarterback's playing at an MVP level. He has injected the entire fan base and franchise with belief. And listen, they're going to win this division. I mean, obviously, you have to look at Philly, but Dallas is cooked. Giants aren't relevant here. I think they're better coached maybe than some people thought. I got the Commanders at number five.
Yeah, I like the Commanders coming into the year. I think ultimately, like, Dan Quinn has proven to be a solid coach, but he's not the reason. And by the way, all this talk about, oh, Jaden Daniels, it's not just one player. It's a lot of things that have gone on there in Washington that can add up to this. They did not make my list. They were on the outside looking in. I'm going to surprise you with number five. I'm going the Chargers. And when I do these rankings, now that's the beauty of them. You can pick them however you want. I'm projecting out. I left the Steelers out as well. I know the Steelers beat the Chargers, but I think with Herbert now starting to emerge and get healthy, the Chargers are on the rise, and they are a dangerous team. And Pittsburgh 6-2, Chargers 5-3. Now, I think the Chargers project to have a better record. I think the AFC is far superior to the NFC. You'll see that in my rankings here. But number five for me, and by the way, if I were ranking, I would probably still, and I hate Philadelphia and Sirianni. And, I shouldn't say I hate him, but I'm not a fan of Sirianni as the head coach. But the Eagles, to me, are still more dangerous than Washington, who is playing a little above their heads right now, and at some point will have their comeuppance. I mean, they could have lost two games to the Giants. So if I had a rank, I'd rank Philly over Washington. But for this, I'm going the Chargers number five.
You know what's interesting about that, where, you know, we talk about the Harbaugh effect, and obviously Herbert, they're letting him loose a little bit more, and anywhere Harbaugh goes, he brings Greg Roman, which obviously has the big impact in the run game. It's happened everywhere he's been. They're playing some sneaky good defense, too. Yep. So I they're not on my list, but I might regret that omission in a week or two. I wouldn't be surprised if they pop it at some point. I have the Bills at number four. Now, the Bills have four straight wins. They're playing well. They picked up Amari Cooper, scored a touchdown right away. And I know Kansas City's undefeated, but when you, and I believe in them big time, but when you look at the Bills' path to the AFC East, I mean, I think the Bills have the easiest path to clinch a division, and obviously, you know, you got to stay healthy, but they're playing for a high seed, and I know McDermott is not viewed up there as a great coach, but they've got continuity, they've got a great quarterback, that's not exactly breaking news, they can run a little bit, the Bills to me are very dangerous, I like them, they're better than I thought they'd be, thought they lost some defensive pieces, but they've adjusted. I got Buffalo number four.
I also have the Bills at number four here, for a lot of the reasons you just said. I mean, look, they're undefeated at home, they're 3-0 in the division. I don't care how bad the division is. Those are important things, especially when I'm looking at the power rankings. And in a very difficult conference, they're 5-2. The Bills have played solid football. They could do it a little bit of defense. They could do it running the football now, which is a nice element. And you mentioned adding Cooper, Josh Allen, a stud quarterback. Ideally, they should be higher. The Bills are going to want to go out there and compete and win a Super Bowl. I don't think they're there yet. I do have them at number four.
Okay, let's move to number three. I've got the Ravens here. Now, to me, they've got they've got pretty much everything going for them, because what they bring to the table offensively, unlike some of the best teams in the NFL, that ground game is going to be there in snow and wind and rain and whatever it is. So that's going to be there all the way through January. They've got a great quarterback. They're very well coached. You know that they average 181 yards rushing a game? It's insane, dude. So to me, I don't know that there's an NFL team that creates the mismatches offensively as much as the Ravens do. And, I mean, Baltimore's, they're just one of those franchises that even when they lose a piece and you worry about them, they always seem to regenerate and restock. Ravens are legit. They could win the Super Bowl.
I have Baltimore at number two on my list. So I have Kansas City at number three. And I get, you got to pay them the respect. They're the champs. They're 8-0. They're undefeated. Yeah. But, man, at some point, BT, they're going to get it. Like, they're playing with fire. And, again, they just keep winning. And until Mahomes actually gets beat in a big spot, I get that you have to side with him. But my gut feel, more powerful team right now than Kansas City is the Baltimore Ravens. And I have them at number three. I have the Chiefs at number three. For all the reasons you just mentioned about Baltimore, yep, is why I have them a little bit higher. But I have the Chiefs at number three. And we probably have the same top three, but obviously a different order here. Kansas City's great, but I think two teams are in front of them. And I'll go with number two, Baltimore. And look, the coach is there. The running attack is there. They have the weapons offensively in the passing game now to complement that as well. Lamar Jackson, MVP type season yet again. Until they do it in the postseason, it's tough to put them ahead of Kansas City, but maybe this is the year. And based on what we've seen so far through the first 9 weeks, I'm going to have Baltimore ahead of Kansas City at number two.
Interesting. I'll tell you why Kansas City is number one for me in a moment. Yeah, I got the Lions number two here. They're the best team in the NFC. To me, it's not even close. You know, Jared Goff is a guy who's protecting the ball and making plays. And, you know, whether you're 8 years old or 30, your job as a quarterback is to score points, get your team in the end zone. They do that. They've got, I love their blend of, and this goes down to their head coach and obviously their coordinator, who's going to be courted again as a head coach this offseason. They are very innovative. They're very much, I don't know if they're like ahead of some of the concepts that they run, but like they're just very innovative. So they like, and when you have an innovative offensive team, I think the tendency is to think, well, are they soft? Are they too finesse? No, because their coach is an absolute madman, and I think it's the perfect balance of toughness and the ability to spread you out a little bit and even run when you have to. So they have a great home field. Lions fans are like Jet fans and all the other teams who are starving. When you get a piece of meat, and they had it last year, and it continues, like it goes from a downtrodden fan base to rabid times a million. I got the Lions too. And the reason, Sal, I've got Kansas City number one. Now, I don't disagree that, you know, they're 8-0. I get that. And they did beat the Ravens. That matters. Mm-hmm. They did beat Cincy. Cincy's good, even though they struggled. And they did win at the Chargers, which to me is a nice win. But the reason I put them 8-0, all right, they're 4-0 on the road, but not every 4-0 road mark is made evenly. Do you realize that they've already made three trips out west in eight games? They beat the Chargers, they beat the Niners, and they beat the Raiders. That is an arduous, travel schedule, man, and they still win. So, you know, it's not what it used to be where they're showing up and hanging 40-plus on you. And I don't think that they've got that capability to do it with any sort of frequency, with all due respect to Mahomes. But the road to 8-0, it's been a little grittier than maybe I expected. I got Kansas City number one.
Yeah, and you're paying them more respect. Maybe I should, and I have them third. I think the two best teams, most dominant teams, tough teams, physical teams, teams that could beat you up are Baltimore and Detroit. And that's why I have Detroit number one. And their win in Green Bay on the road in those conditions to me was as impressive as a win as you can have. Green Bay is very good. That division is good overall. The NFC North and the Lions are dominating it right now. You look at their plus-minus differential. They are the best in the league by far at 110. And it's not just the numbers, but you watch them play. You watch how they dominate. I'm with you with Campbell. I believe in him. He's got that balance. They were a team that had the pedigree a year ago. They're by far the best team in the NFC. As a matter of fact, they're the only team that I had in my top five power rankings in the NFC. It's Detroit, Baltimore, Kansas City, the Bills, and then the Chargers. So that's it for me. Detroit far and away the best team. Maybe that plays into it too, a weaker conference.
Yeah.
But I have them for all the reasons that you mentioned, number one, and I would put Baltimore just behind him, with acknowledging the greatness and respecting Kansas City.
Sure.
I still just, my gut feel, and maybe it is the way that they win these dominant games at times where Kansas City hasn't done that yet, but that's why I'd have Detroit number one.
Let me ask you this real quick.
Yep.
Week 10, if I said, all right, Sal, you can choose your Super Bowl matchup, the most interesting matchup.
Yeah.
Who would you want to see play?
Not who I think, who I'd want to see.
Yeah, but obviously, you know, who you want to see is partially tied into who you think could get there. But yeah, a mixture.
That's a good question. I will say, the other day as I was driving around just thinking about stuff, I want to root for the Lions. Mm-hmm. I think it'd be great to have. Now, is that like the Super Bowl great appeal matchup? No, but I think I want to root for the Lions in it. I would probably go my top two teams, Detroit, Baltimore. I don't want to see Kansas City again.
I hear you.
You know?
I do.
Maybe the Bills. Maybe Detroit, Buffalo would be a good one.
Well, I have two for you. And the Lions are both of them. For the Lions to get there would be amazing for that city. So Lions, Bills, somebody's finally winning a Super Bowl.
Yeah, right.
I mean, so that's incredibly intriguing to me. I think my second choice, or at least 1A, would be the Lions and the Ravens. Because you look at Lamar Jackson, and everybody knows he's amazing.
Yeah.
But to me, he's almost like, and you'll appreciate this because he was from our time growing up, he's almost like the Dominique Wilkins of the NFL. Dominique never cut through. Now, those Celtics teams were in his way. But I would have always been intrigued to see Dominique Wilkins play in the finals. And even to this day, as amazing as Dominique was, I feel like for those who didn't see him, and even some who did, I feel like they put Dominique's flash, which was, I mean, only second to Jordan in terms of Duncan, over his substance. Dominique Wilkins was amazing. And I feel like some people still associate Lamar. Nice, a highlight guy. Hey, can you really win with him when you have to, when it's cold?
Well, he's failed in a postseason.
Yeah. So I'd like to see him get that chance. Now, I don't know if he'd beat Detroit. I do think he would show up and show out. I'd like to see him have the opportunity. And it's odd, as a Jets fan saying, I'd like to see the Bills get there. But that Lions-Bills, you know, all-time, you know, talk about brown paper bag matchup for all those fans for years, although the Bills have been good for a couple of years, you know what I mean. That would be great appeal. So Lions-Bills or Lions-Ravens, that's what I'd sign up for.
You're talking about the ultimate passionate fan bases for those teams.
Jeez.
That would be tremendous. Yeah, I'd be in for that. All right, there you go. A little power rankings, as we'll do every Thursday at 1:20 moving forward the rest of the season on the BT and Sal Show.
Your official station to talk Knicks. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app. Call of the Day with Brendan Tierney and Sal Licata on The Fan.
Today's Call of the Day brought to you by Volvo Cars Ramsey. Finding the Volvo you want is easy at Volvo Cars Ramsey, and by Edison Heating and Cooling, New Jersey's heating experts. Rob is calling from Danbury, Connecticut. What's up, Rob?
BT, I'm a little disappointed in your Knicks take from the last couple of segments, and if you'll allow me to have a conversation with you,
yeah,
I can go why.
Of course. What do you got? What's up?
Thanks, brother.
Yeah.
There was a caller a couple callers ago who touched on it already, but first year that LeBron did his thing down in Miami, that team was 9-9 through 18 games and ended up in the finals. So there's an example. But on the other side of the coin, the example of teams that have done what the Knicks are trying to do, make big superstar traits that have failed, all of the other nonsense around those teams, and we'll use the empty nets. Shout out the legend Steve Summers. We'll use the empty nets as the example here. When Durant got there, they were poorly coached, and those players had no respect for the coach. The GM had his power taken away, and it felt like the players were running the organization, and you just felt and saw dysfunction, none of which exists around the Knicks right now.
I agree with that part.
Thanks, brother. My other point here is that we're so early.
This is easy.
I was waiting for, like, for a pushback a little bit there.
I was waiting for you to come at me, Rob. I thought you were going to get after it. Come on, buddy. Let's go.
I don't want to be disrespectful.
It's all good.
To you on your own show.
All good.
No, what a nice caller that was, BT. Why can't all callers be as respectful as Rob?
Yeah, just like some of the comments. Everybody respectfully.
It doesn't make for great radio necessarily, but it is nice to talk about it. And look, we're debating sports, so Rob could have come, of course, a little bit harder in that regard. But yeah, I mean, that's the main issue. And in case you missed anything, check it out on the free Odyssey app. We started the show talking about the Knicks. We did the first hour on that. We talked about Soto and the Mets and the Yanks and Alonzo. Did some football with Jonathan Casillas as well. So we've really covered a lot here. Just had our NFL power rankings, which was fun to do. But yeah, I mean, With the Knicks, there are two ways to look at it. You have chosen since the beginning of the season, after the trade, just out of curiosity and maybe being unsure if this was the right fit, knowing that there were going to be some learning curves. For me, I'm excited about it. I believe in it. I think it's going to work. I'm not going to go now. Obviously, I was annoyed, just like everybody else, watching that game last night, just like I was against Houston. My bigger issue, BT, was their inability to finish. Like, that should be something, with all the scores that they have, that shouldn't be something that takes that long to figure it out. You should not be getting beat by Atlanta on both ends of the floor down the stretch, and they did, but it's going to take time to gel. I ultimately think, though, the Knicks will be okay.
Just out of curiosity, where do you think they would be if they had Randle and DiVincenzo? Just out of curiosity, because you were more of a Randle guy than me.
Yeah, I was going to say, remember, I wanted to actually see it through with Randle being a part of this, because what we saw last year, for a short period, they were the best team in the NBA with Randle after they got Ananobi in that trade. I think they'd probably be at what, 5-6-2, something like that. What's the record? 3-4, so 7 games. Maybe they'd be 5-2. I think they'd be a little bit better. Maybe 4-3, but they'd be a little bit better.
And that's not even the point. I was just curious, though. You know,
Were they beating the Celtics? No. They might not have beaten the Cavs anyway. I mean, maybe they win one of the next. So I'd say a game better. So let's say
Sal, what if they had Bridges and Randle and DiVincenzo?
You know, I don't know, because if you were to ask me my biggest concern about this team, aside from the obvious, like they all have to eventually gel together, but I would be concerned about the impact of Bridges. I love the trade when they first got him, and I still do believe in him, but I'm not, like, I love Karl Anthony Towns and fully believe in him. I've seen enough to believe in him and know that eventually it'll fit. I have not seen nearly enough of Bridges. I think he's got to really find it and be a consistent player. So I think that's the biggest question mark. If you want to focus on that, then I would agree with you that I'd have at least some mild, legitimate concerns potentially about Bridges and his impact as he tries to find his way with two other stars on the team.
Yeah, I guess my fears about Towns, aside from some, and I don't mean this year, he's been very good for the Knicks, but he's had some injury issues. Okay, we chronicled that when they made the trade. But look at Ewing. Like, when Ewing was drafted, the Knicks were, there was a reason they were the first overall pick. They were just wretched. All right, this was Hubie Brown, and Bernard was hurt, and they had nothing. And Patrick, now, it didn't happen in the first year or two, but then Patino came, and they got Mark Jackson. They started to shoot some threes with Trent Tucker and those guys and Rod Strickland, and they became a good team, and then they eventually became a borderline great team. They just ran into Jordan too many times. Whereas with Towns, you know, he needed Anthony Edwards, and it was like 7 years into his career before his team did anything. You don't think that that's a bit of an indictment on Towns?
No, I mean, maybe, but here in New York and watching him play the way that he does and knowing that it's with Brunson, you know, I mean, I understand why you're saying that. I can only go based off of what I'm seeing here. And remember, like, it's one thing if I think or you think it's an indictment. Tibbs, in some way, shape, or form, approve the trade. Like, I doubt Leon Rose and the Knicks are making that trade without asking Tibbs. So if Tibbs believed that it could work and he could be a final piece here, I'm going to side with him. I believe in Leon Rose. I believe, and with reason, not just hope, with good reason. Well, I believe in Tibbs. I believe in Brunson. I believe in the talent of Karl Anthony Towns and even Bridges and the other pieces. I do think eventually it's going to gel and fit together. Obviously, my belief, it doesn't matter. Like, we need to see it play out, and it hasn't through 7 games.
If you put money down right now, would you have money for the Knicks getting to the Eastern Conference Finals?
Yes, but not beyond that. But that's probably what I would have had anyway. Maybe not before the year, but after watching opening night and realizing how, like, I don't know if there was a move that they could make that would make them better than Boston.
No, I don't think there is either.
Which is why I understand your point about, hey, if you're not going to beat them talent-wise, maybe you beat them the other way with the heart and toughness and chemistry.
I wouldn't make that bet right now.
You don't think they're getting to the Eastern Conference Finals?
I don't feel it now. I think that people are overlooking the Cavaliers. And I don't know what kind of seed the Knicks, and I think that that's going to matter. Like, eventually they'll coalesce better, all right? And they'll be better than they looked. I have no question about that. But does it take them 20 games? I would say more like 35 to 40. And by that point, you know, if you mess around and you're, you know, 4 or 5 games over 500, now you're going to have to play basically 70, 80% winning percentage ball the rest of the way to be a top 3 seed.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's really realistic.
I think right now, even with their 3-4 record, they are the clear, like at least minimum, worst case, third best team in the conference.
Third best.
The Pacers, the Nets, the Hawks.
No, forget about the Nets. Yeah,
okay,
about the Hawks.
But these are the teams that are in front of them. Even like as bad as a start, the Knicks are 6. So you're really talking about two teams, and one was probably going to be in front of them anyway.
Okay,
so
but here's the other thing, too. And remember when the Knicks beat the Heat 1-8 matchup? Of course you do.
Yep.
That was a truncated season. Houston shot. Gus Johnson's great call. The other thing to consider, and you know, I've got to see how this plays out. I don't want to get too wrapped up into seedings because I do think, even though we laugh at them and you've got a great nickname, the Semi-Sixers, if Embiid comes back...
You see Maxey's hurt now?
I did see that, yeah. But he's gonna be right eventually. The Sixers are the kind of team, possibly, that could be a 7 seed. And if the Knicks are the 2 seed, if the Knicks' chemistry is not a lot better, the Knicks could lose that series.
Well, remember, we saw that a year ago, right? The Sixers were supposed to be a better seed, and I was talking about that's a bad matchup for the Knicks. I didn't really want that. Yeah, I mean, that's fair. Maybe I'm overlooking the Sixers or the Bucks right now because they're buried, but, I mean, imagine their start and the panic potentially going on there. Yeah, it's good. Hey, it's not going to be easy, but I'd still take my chances right now on the Knicks over anybody in the East outside of Boston.
All right, listen, I hope you're right, and you could be. I just wish I felt a little more conviction with that right now, but it's early.
Yeah, it is early.
It's early.
And look, we'll continue to keep our eye on the Knicks, of course, and have some fun as the season goes along here and hope that they start to gel a little bit better. There have been some good signs. The win in Miami was terrific, but we'll keep our eyes on that. And obviously the focus is going to remain on Juan Soto as we move ahead. Tomorrow we'll do a lot of football. I know we got to get to the Jets stuff and talk about their big game. You know, we talked about the Giants. I don't know what more there's to say other than don't come back without a win from the Giants.
we've said that 10 times already.
Yeah, to everybody who'll listen, whether it's Illuminor, whether it's JC, or whoever.
Hoff.
Yeah, Hoff, exactly. If you're the Giants, like that may be the game, BT, where I finally change my tune on Brian Day. I've been a Dable supporter here, even with that awful record, and Dable took accountability for that record today, saying it's on me or whatever it was. Yesterday, whenever he spoke, I got to be better. You know, we got to be better. The results have been awful, and I take responsibility for that. Great. If they don't win this game against Carolina, and I expect them to, but if they don't, then I think everything should be on the table. And you could say the same for the Jets. It's going to be a huge game for the Jets to keep things alive this year.
Oh, no doubt. And here's the irony, right? So both of our teams, you know, Jets are our life support, Giants are done. But they both have must-win games. The Jets have to win to stay alive, and I believe the Giants have to win to keep the Vultures away, where I think almost everybody at that point would turn on the coach and the GM.
All right, that does it for us. Enjoy the rest of your, what is today, Thursday?
Yeah, yep.
All right, BT. Good luck with what you got going on over there.
Thank you, brother.
Thanks, everybody, listening and called. We appreciate each and every one of you. Thanks to Dove and Hoff as well. We'll be back tomorrow, 10 a.m. Evan Tiki, they're coming up next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
For the past 3 seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a 4th season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.